I am Denise Morris for the Old Mole Variety Hour, and thanks for tuning in this morning. And thanks to KBOO members, old and new, for supporting community radio and programs like the Old Mole. Remember, you can find us on the web. Look for the Old Mole Variety Hour on KBOO's own website, kboo.fm/Old Mole Variety Hour, or download the Old Mole podcast and listen on the go. And now, Jen Hawken and Hanani Kalama.
Welcome to KBOO, Hanani Kalama.
Aloha.
Well, you've been working with the Necessity Film Project for several years now, joining the team as associate producer for the recently completed second film in a two-part series. It's titled Necessity, Climate Justice, and the Thin Green Line, and it will be having its Portland theatrical premiere this Sunday, April 17th at the Hollywood Theater. We'll be talking later this morning about that event. I'd also like to get your thoughts today on two reports on the climate crisis that circulated in the media this past week. But first, Hanani, can you talk about how you bring your background in global health, including mental health, as well as your expertise in Native Hawaiian healing practices to the documentary films? How did your background shape your vision of the films?
Oh, well, definitely when you look at wellness and overall, regardless of where your background comes from, you really look at the whole person and what that entitles, their family, situation, the environment they live in, and the ongoing change that happens in daily life. And sometimes that there's very little marketed change, and other times it's very impactful and very traumatic, and it can be very widespread, which is what we're living through now. And it's really about how do you help each person, including yourself, to be well and to navigate through the changes that is life itself. So I think part of my experience has been in global health has been in living in many different environments with different cultures and understanding that, but also from the foundations of my own culture where wellness is just part of daily life and closeness of people and how we interact as a group, and which we use that word ohana, but it means more than just your parents and siblings. It's a wider scope of community.
So and the kinship of humanity.
Yes, and that's kind of an approach, and also not just humanity, but the relationship to all living things. That whole perspective brings you to look at any project or anything that you're working on. Even though film in the past has not been something that you would see someone like me doing, actually, I think it's important to step away sometimes from what your usual is to see where you can be most effective. And in a film like this, dealing with justice and participatory filmmaking, where the subjects are very involved with the story, you're not talking just about them, but they're talking about their own story, then it becomes a very real, because it's part of your community, it's your next door neighbor, and it's the person at the grocery store, and it, you know, it's everyone involved. And it becomes very personal and believable. It's not somebody's just framing a narrative about you, but it is you.
There are different ways, of course, of telling stories in films or documentaries. I mean, many classes and workshops on filmmaking will say it's all about stories. You know, there are different ways of telling a story and different ways that people as an audience identify with the people in that story or disidentify with people in the story. And so it's more complicated than just simple promotion of storytelling. Even stories from Indigenous communities vary a lot. And the experiences and assessments of people most affected by the climate crisis can vary. Let's talk more about kind of the emotional side of the climate crisis and stories about the climate crisis by kind of taking up these two reports I mentioned. I'd like your take on them. One was a dire assessment, part of a series of assessments by the UN's Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, stating that we have only a few years now to dramatically reduce carbon emissions to keep global temperatures below the level where we reach catastrophic tipping points. The other news report was based on a press release by a group of climate researchers who met in Norway in early April to take up what they called doomism. More than climate denial, these researchers claim, the problem now centers on a pervasive belief, particularly among young people, that it's too late to save the planet. It's a feeling that nothing can be done, so why bother? And indeed, that may be a response to this last UN IPCC report, is to say, well, how can we possibly make a difference in a few years? Anani, what are your thoughts on those two reports, and particularly around this diagnosis of doomism?
Yes, well, I certainly am not an expert on that kind of a psychoanalytical diagnosis, but I do understand the term when you feel all hope is gone, and that often if you can't see a way through something, it kind of paralyzes you and you don't want to do anything. There's no point in doing anything. And with that sometimes comes a negative response also, not just staying paralyzed, but choosing to do worse. There are just so many possibilities. And so what you need to provide for people is, what is hope and how to bring hope forward? And I'm a strong believer that you bring hope through action, whether it's through music or arts or in a film or taking action. And this film is about a whole community, people from very different environments who live in the same area and but see not only what's happening in their neighborhoods, but what is happening in a global perspective. They all see the small and large picture. And we have not just adults, but very involved students and youth in this process. And so I beg to differ that there is no choice with that kind of a reporting. I do acknowledge climate anxiety is huge, and there's no doubt about it, and it grows. And it's not just about climate, it's about what we've lived through in the last few years with the pandemic. And it's about ongoing war. There's just lots of things that could lead to that. I think sometimes when the media promotes only one vision, then that's what you see. And you need to counter that look with other scenarios that are just as important and more so, because they're all about hope. And taking action, especially from a civil perspective, like the everyday citizen can take action just in their daily life, as well as in civil disobedience, which is what the film is about, is these community members going forward and coming and joining as an alliance of like-minded people about how we can counteract and show that hope is not only there, but thriving, and that we can build a resilient community. Change is always going to happen in life, whether it's very traumatic or very small component. And if you look at just history, how many things we have dealt with civilizations over time. And it's about, how do you deal with your time? How do you live through your time? And if you have children, and how are you going to help them live through their time? And not just this time, but the times that they're going to face in 20, 30, 40 years. We can't possibly know what they're going to face. We do know what they are facing now, and we do know what we have faced in the past and what our ancestors have faced. And we have seen that constant response and resilience building in building community and bringing people together and surviving and then creating a very thriving civilization over time. But if you don't counteract this with real hope, and that often is related to actions, then it's very hard for people to see that going through the maze of only one lens.
You're saying that many Native communities have learned to both acknowledge loss and trauma at the same time, build capacities to hold what's dear and value what's dear, and not only looking at the future through the lens of loss, but how much a tone of gratitude, love for not only place, but for the non-human living world and the...
Oh, absolutely.
A vision of not only of a steady depreciation in life values, but reorienting ourselves towards perhaps what's important.
Yes, I think that's actually a real positive outcome of this kind of, I would call the word onslaught that we've dealt with, is that you do start to value what's precious. You start to determine and prioritize it. And sometimes people decide, well, to make complete changes in their life because of it. Because they can see, well, what I was doing is not getting us anywhere. And look at our choices, not just politically, but, you know, economic choices have been not necessarily the best choices. And so we have to choose other ways to improve things. And we have to do it collectively. And sometimes you just really need to step out of what your usual behavior is and realize that to make that change, you have to be that change. And so that's what I enjoy about working with this kind of a documentary, is because we watch people doing that. They come from this very, you know, daily, regular life that all of your neighborhood is doing. As more and more people become aware, they're realizing they can't do that any longer. They need to do something more definitive. And that's what the impact of these kinds of films and what necessity is really all about, is when you are faced with a world of despair, that this kind of a story is about people taking action, and they inspire hope in spite of this mounting despair. And it's a way of finding healing by doing something about it. I think that's one of the strongest messages that we can give our youth, and we can give the generations that coexist today and onward, that there is hope, and it's inspired by you making a choice and you making a decision and taking action. And these kinds of actions are nonviolent actions, and yet people are doing what you would not have thought they would do even, you know, a month ago. And it's because their sense of awareness of that it's they themselves that must make those changes.
And some express this deep ethical and moral commitment to the next generation as well, and interrupting business as usual. Can you say something about the intergenerational dynamic, both in our team, which is very intergenerational, the team that made the film, but also following activists who, of course, the Sunrise Movement has charged old people with failing them, with leaving young people with an uninhabitable planet and an unlivable future. Although I think in that accusation, there's the failure to recognize perhaps a history of environmental organizing and how powerful these industries have been in shutting down dissent. How do you see the film as responding to the intergenerational challenge of the climate crisis?
Well, I like the way the film is interweaving all the different perspectives of people of different ages and how they are looking at what they're doing about the response, but also that they're also collaborating and joining together in alliances with each other. That shows that they can work together, and it isn't like pointing fingers, it's your fault, or it's your fault. I think we're way past blaming people, each other. What we really need to do is work collectively together. And we can draw that from our own practices. Of course, culturally, that's part of my way of living, is to bring that together. But I have also recognized that these kinds of things happening in our own communities, it's like, well, how come we don't speak our same language? How come, you know, we don't have our territories? How come, and it's all your fault? But they didn't live through those horrific times. And so they only see what they're faced with. But I still have a lot of hope in youth. I'm very inspired by them. I think the climate action youth work for the last 2 years has been incredible. I'd rather not say somebody's old, it's just that they have lived through a lot of things, and maybe just understanding those kind of changes, it's not so easy to do. But I also think we should support our youth. I think they're doing a really good job of recognize what's important and prioritizing for them. And sometimes we sit back a little bit too much and need to step forward a little bit, or get out of their way and support them and let them, you know, take some leadership, and then we support them as they move forward, but also help them temper what they do so that they have a broader perspective.
There is wisdom of the elders that has a place.
There
in
is, absolutely.
Okay. And you're not going to give up that ground.
No, I don't think so. And I think it's for their benefit, is yeah. to recognize that. We have a saying about that come from our ancestors, and that we look to the past to give us guidance, for sure. And that we look to the future, to what is possibilities and how we can best get there. We look quite far. We don't look like to tomorrow. It's making choices, but this is your time of life. So you have to live your time of life. You can't wish for the past that has come and gone. Well, you can hope for the future, but you can't live in the future until you live today.
Every historical moment has its possibilities. That's part of yes. the notion of a crisis. It has potentials that have not been realized. And some of that intergenerational solidarity and differences will be part of the program on the 17th of April, the yes. Hollywood Theater. You can go on the Hollywood Theater website.
Very exciting. Very
yes.
exciting.
And you'll be with us as well as associate producer Kathy Sampson Cruza and Jan Zuckerman, teacher featured in the film, and Anika and Sidra Schramm, who are young activists involved in the Friday fire drill actions, that we'll all be there to have a discussion after the film with the audience. Well, thank you so much for joining
You're
me
welcome.
Today.
Thank you, Jan.
Yeah, Hanani Kalama. And we'll see you Sunday.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
I know you don't get a chance.